Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I am your host, Vincent Treewell. This evening, I would like to discuss a phenomenon that has gotten more and more attention over the last few years, something that I've experienced, and something that many, if not all of you, have probably also experienced. I am referring to the Mandela Effect. I'll go into a little bit later why I really don't like that term, but I think many people know what it means. When you have memories that are contradicted by the historical record, where nothing you can find matches the memory that you have, where you have seemingly false memories, but yet there are a significant number of other people who have the same false memory. It's fascinating, bizarre, and somewhat frightening, to be very honest. So that's what we'll be talking about tonight. The Mandela Effect. What is it? What is it not? And what the hell? Let's get started. The term Mandela Effect was coined in 2009 by prolific author and paranormal researcher Fiona Broom. She arrived at this term because in the news, in the documented history of the world we live in, Nelson Mandela had served a lengthy time in prison in South Africa as an anti-apartheid activist and was kept incarcerated for decades. But in 1994, he became president of South Africa and received a Nobel Peace Prize for the peaceful transition of power from the apartheid government to a popularly elected government. And he and the last white president of South Africa, a man named de Klerk, both were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for a near impossible task of creating a peaceful transition of power, which they did, and that's a great thing. Mandela was president of South Africa from 1994 to 1999, and eventually died at an old age in 2013. However, Fiona Broom had a distinct memory of him dying in prison in the 80s, and she coined the term Mandela Effect as an umbrella term for when your conscious memory does not match the historical facts, does not match what can be shown in the records, in the data, in the news. I've never liked that term because I don't think that that's what happened with Nelson Mandela. And I don't think that the things that we call the Mandela Effect almost ever involve big political changes like that. There are always little things at the periphery. My own personal belief about why people remember Nelson Mandela dying in prison in the 80s is because American media doesn't really cover foreign affairs very well at all. And there's a lot of reasons for that, including a lot of Americans aren't really that interested in stuff that happens outside of America. Be that as it may, in the 80s, apartheid in South Africa started to become an issue in America. And in 1987, there was a very popular and, you know, a critically acclaimed movie called Cry Freedom, starring Denzel Washington, as a black anti-apartheid activist who was murdered in prison in South Africa. The that's not about Nelson Mandela. That's about a different man who is a real person. It's based on a true story, named Stephen Biko. Steve Biko was an anti-apartheid activist, and he was murdered in prison by the police. That happened. But that's the character that Denzel Washington's playing. If you're an American and you're not particularly watching the news that closely, and you're not that into South African politics, it would be really easy to conflate in your mind that the guy in the Denzel Washington movie and Nelson Mandela were the same person, and that he was murdered in prison. I really believe that that explanation is probably why people think that Mandela died in prison in the 80s. But it was Steve Biko that died in prison in the 80s. So that's why I've never liked the term Mandela effect, because the overwhelming majority of Mandela effects are not big political issues. They're small peripheral things that you're never quite sure of. But that is where the term comes from. Interestingly, Ms. Broom is primarily a ghost hunter and has written a lot on ghost hunting and spirits and things like that. But she did coin the term Mandela effect. And I'll just use it here because people know what that means. And it's just a lot more convenient. I first became aware of this false memory phenomena a few years ago when I looked up a movie that I had seen in the past. I have a distinct memory of watching the movie Donnie Brasco, where Johnny Depp plays a FBI agent who has infiltrated the mafia. And I distinctly remember watching that movie when I was in the military and watching it with one of my friends in 1992 in California. I also remember it watching it with a different friend in Fort Benning, Georgia in 1994. And I distinctly remember one scene, which doesn't appear in any other similar movies like, say, Casino or Goodfellas or any of that. And that is a scene where the mafia guys have a meeting in a Japanese restaurant, and the Johnny Depp character, Donnie Brasco, is wearing a wire in his boot. And the maitre d' of the restaurant asks them to all remove their shoes, as is traditional. And knowing that he can't expose the recording device, Johnny Depp goes into this outraged speech about how the Japanese killed his father in World War II, and it leads to the mafia guys basically committing a hate crime on the maitre d' of the Japanese restaurant. That's a really unique scene. That doesn't happen in The Godfather. That doesn't happen in any of 100 other mafia movies or FBI movies or what have you. That happens in Donnie Brasco and nothing else. I remember watching that with two different friends of mine and just commenting that he really went over the top on beating up that guy. And one of my friends commenting he had to do that or they would have killed, the mafia guys would have killed it. But the only problem is Donnie Brasco wasn't created. It was released in 1997. I've watched it since. I've watched it with my wife. But I apparently have a false memory, a couple of false memories, of having watched a movie that didn't exist at that time. And when I just happened to look up Donnie Brasco on IMDb, and it said 1997, yes, I freaked out a little bit. I didn't know what to make of it. And I started, like, sure, I'm looking this stuff up, and there's just no scenario where I could have seen that movie with those guys at that time. And we haven't really kept in touch, so I couldn't have seen it with them some other time. It's a false memory. At least it's an inaccurate memory. That memory doesn't match the facts of the world we live in. But yet I have it. And that caused me to look into this phenomenon further. I had read up on this and done some research, but I'd really put it on the back burner for a while, until the other day, when I was in a totally non-paranormal meeting with some people that I know, and a woman who is an educated professional mentioned that we were talking about spell check. And she mentioned that when she types the word dilemma in the spell check, it says that it's spelled D-I-L-E-M-M-A. And yet she had a distinct memory of having to memorize as a spelling word dilemma, and that it was spelled D-I-L-E-M-N, as in November, A. I have that exact same memory. I remember that being a difficult spelling word because you had to remember the silent N. Well, apparently there never was a silent N. There is zero record of that ever being spelled that way. It's not a difference between British English and American English. It's not that it was at some point changed. It's not that there's alternative valid spellings. No. It apparently has always been two M's, no N. Even the word history, the etymology of the word dilemma supports it was always two M's, no silent N. Which begs the question, why the hell would we both remember something that's so counterintuitive and remember that that was a difficult word to spell because of a silent N if that never existed? I bring that up because there are at least thousands, and it's easy to extrapolate millions of people who remember having to memorize the word dilemma and having to memorize the silent N. And yet, there's no record of that anywhere. And that really, that's the core experience of the Mandela effect, where you have clear memories of something that there's no record to back that up at all. That quite the opposite. It appears that what you're remembering is all wrong. But this wasn't some, I fully understand the human memory is fallible. It is imperfect. There are many problems with human memory. And that's a big factor in criminal cases. It's a big factor in any number of things. But usually, there's some rhyme and reason to it. Why on earth would we remember a spelling word that, from years ago, that has this silent N that apparently never had? And unlike some misspellings, and I don't claim to be good at spelling. I need spell check. I use it for everything. But unlike, say, spelling ghost without the silent H, that's what I would call a natural misspelling. You spell it the way it sounds. Spelling dilemma with a silent N isn't a natural mistake. It's something that you would have to make an effort to remember. Well, why were we taught that? Were we taught that? And if we weren't taught that, because there's no textbooks, nobody's been able to find a textbook that documents being taught that way, then what are we remembering? Where does such a minor, trivial, but still weirdly specific false memory come from? Why would I have that memory? And why would this woman who didn't grow up with me, didn't grow up in the same area, also have this memory? And thousands and possibly millions of other people. There's websites about this, specifically about the word dilemma and why people remember there being a silent N that now cannot be located. It is really a actual real life mystery. Nobody has, to me, a credible answer for it. And yet there it is. People I know remember it that way. People online remember it that way. A lot of people remember it that way. And yet that's apparently not what happened. Where does something like that come from? And that is the Mandela effect. I'll include in the show notes a link to at least one of the websites connected with the dilemma issue. I have to tell you, this is a difficult topic to research. A lot of people have deeply emotional views about their memories. I stopped talking about it online after a guy totally lost his shit and just went off on me because I questioned whether the breakfast cereal Fruit Loops used to be spelled F-R-U-I-T loops instead of F-R-O-O-T-S. I'm sorry. You know what I'm saying. Versus fruit versus F-R-O-O-T, not quite fruit. And he said that it had changed. And I said, well, Fruit Loops, the cereal, has never had any fruit in it. So they probably wouldn't call it F-R-U-I-T loops. They'd probably call it something that sounds like that but doesn't imply fruit. And he teed the fuck off on me. Like, you would have thought I killed his dog or something. It was crazy. I said, you know, I don't need all this. I don't really care about Fruit Loops. That is one of the recurring popular Mandela effect issues, is the spelling of Fruit Loops. And there are many people who recall it being spelled the other way, okay? I don't have that one. And that's one thing that makes researching this difficult, is some of these I do recall. Others I have no memory of at all, and my memory matches the consensus reality. I think it's like that for almost everybody. There are some greatest hits, which many, many people share, but a lot of investigating this at all is separating the wheat from the chaff, and there's a lot of chaff. There's things I won't even get into because I just feel like it's a road to nowhere. And that especially includes misheard song lyrics. To give one example, and it's a popular example, Jimi Hendrix in the song Purple Haze uses the lyrics as written are, "Excuse me while I kiss the sky." What a lot of people heard was, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy." And at least once, Hendrix went on stage and sang it that way, just for the hell of it. Okay? In the song California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas, there's some disputed lyrics. In an interview, one of the singers admitted that, "I wasn't sure what the lyrics were. We sang it some ways one time, some ways another." One that also comes up a lot is Queen's We Are the Champions, and whether at the very end of that song, Freddie Mercury says, of the world, people want to go to the mat on this song lyric issue. And it's like, that's not even a mystery. Do you not understand that there are multiple mixes of practically every popular song? And that sometimes radio stations cut off the last few seconds to make room for a commercial or another song. I've heard We Are the Champions countless times, and I've heard the clipped ending, and I've heard the one that ends with Of the World. In my experience, they both exist, and sometimes the radio plays it one way, and sometimes it plays it another, the other. You know, I don't even get into that because I don't think it proves anything other than people hear mishear lyrics a lot. There's also things in movies that you totally remember and find out they're wrong. And obviously this hits close to home. I try to avoid things that come down to somebody mumbled, because it's really very few people perfectly enunciate each word. A lot of times we kind of mumble, don't fully finish a word, perhaps have a regional accent, or are talking quite fast, or are talking kind of slow, and it comes out sounding slightly different than maybe what it was written. An a and a the sound really similar. And yet there's an ongoing conflict over whether Anne Rice's book, which became the movie starring Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, Interview with the Vampire or Interview with a Vampire. And I don't take a side on that because I've seen the flick. And I just honestly don't remember. In fact, I've seen it a couple times. Did it change? Was it A and then it became the? I don't know. But that is a recurring Mandela effect that people have strong views on. Among the most common and ones that I do experience or that I do have currently inaccurate memories of are the Berenstain Bears. When I was a child, my parents got the books and we got them from the library, and sometimes I got them as gifts. They're a series of children's books about these, you know, anthropomorphic bears that learn lessons and stuff, and it's a children's book about the Berenstain Bears. When my children were young, I got them those books. And to the best of my memory, for what it's worth, Berenstain was spelled B-E-R-E-N-S-T-E-I-N, like Einstein or Frankenstein. It was Berenstain or Berenstein. If you go to the bookstore today or to the library, you will not find that. That does not exist. And no human being can produce a physical copy. But yet, you'll find all the books, but it's now spelled with the last five letters being S-T-A-I-N, Berenstain. Now, I totally remember it being Berenstain. And practically everybody I've ever spoken to this about remembers it being Berenstain. I even remember as a child, a little older child, but still in my youth, thinking that it was kind of weird when the Berenstain Bears had a Christmas special because I thought they were Jewish, because Berenstein, yeah, I thought that was a Jewish name. The S-T-E-I-N name changing to S-T-A-I-N. I can't believe that people wouldn't have called it Berenstain back then. And yet nobody I knew ever called it that. And there's just so many people. I would easily say a majority who remember the Stein ending. And yet now you can't find a book. You can't find a used book. You can't find a book in the attic. You can't find one that doesn't end with the A-I-N. The Barons, the authors of the books, are no longer with us. They passed away a number of years ago. But their son is alive. And he has said that, no, our name was always Berenstain. S-T-A-I-N. I have no reason to think he would lie about something like that. I mean, what's the gain? Who the hell cares? If you changed it, you changed it. But yet, if you changed it, there should be, like, millions of the old version around, and there are zero. There are absolutely zero. I don't know how to explain that. I don't know what the hell that means, but I do know that is the memory a lot of people have, including myself. And it's always stuff like that. It's always stuff that's peripheral. It's never, for example, I've never, even online, heard of one person who remembered a different set of presidents within our living memory. That, as far as presidents I can remember, the first one is Gerald Ford. And it goes Ford, Carter, Reagan, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump. And on to the current Joe Biden. And nobody I've been able to find remembers anything different than that. It's never the big important issues. It's always peripheral stuff. Logos for companies. But never the company you work for. Things that you recall, but it's never like a major focus of your life. I don't know why this happens or what it means, but I know it has to mean something. And there's several theories out there, which we'll discuss in just a moment. One of the other interesting recurring Mandela effects is a strange memory that people have. Okay, it's strange to me. It's not strange to the people who have it. About a movie. A movie starring the comedian and actor Sinbad. And he plays a genie. Now, there was a movie called Kazam where Shaquille O'Neal played a genie. That's not what people remember. And the idea that people are going to easily confuse Sinbad and Shaquille O'Neal, I'll dismiss out of hand. Okay. And just know that they look totally different. They're totally different people with totally different movie personas. Just know. My own wife remembers the Sinbad Genie movie. And when I asked her, are you sure you don't mean Kazam starring Shaq? She gave me a rather withering gaze. I know who the hell Sinbad is. As it happens, Sinbad comes from the same small town in Michigan that she does. He's a huge local personality. He's one of the very few famous people from that town. He's not going to be confused for anybody. And she is 100% certain that she saw a movie where he played an Aladdin-style genie. The catch is, or as we say on the show, the weird part, is that Sinbad completely denies having ever made such a movie. Which, again, why the hell would he lie about it? There's no, you know, he's pretty open about his work, and there's nothing to see here. There's nothing to hide. And he's sometimes trolled and mocked people in a funny way on the internet about this non-existent movie. But there are many people, and you can easily estimate millions of people, who claim to have seen this movie. And he was definitely a genie. He wasn't something else. He wasn't somebody else. It was Sinbad, and he was a genie. And yet, nothing like that can be found. I don't know what to make of it, but it's something. It can't mean nothing. You know, a lot of the difficulty comes in, you're kind of panning for gold here. You're separating out the real, actual mysteries from things that are also real, like conflation, confusing Nelson Mandela and Steve Biko is a very plausible conflation. If you're not South African and you don't follow South African politics all that much, yeah, you could totally confuse those two fellows. Misremembering things is a reality that does happen. I won't even say especially if they're not that important things in your life, because it happens a lot under a lot of different circumstances. But when you have so many people remembering things a certain way and no documentation at all, it does provoke a lot of speculation. And I just want to add one more, because this is also one that I experience. I have had a lot of Fruit of the Loom t-shirts in my life. And I clearly remember that there was a logo on the Fruit of the Loom t-shirts. And that involved a cornucopia, a horn of plenty. Apparently, that never existed. Which begs the question, well, then what the hell am I remembering it for? I mean, remembering the logo on my t-shirt doesn't seem like anything that would have a great deal of emotional significance. It doesn't seem like much of anything. And yet, it apparently never existed. So where does that memory come from? And why would my mind create a false memory of something so trivial? That is the Mandela effect in a nutshell. That's really it. People have come up with some answers. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to add one more, and then we're going to talk about the theories. This comes from the Bible. The Hebrew Bible of the Jewish people, and what Christians would call the Old Testament. And the verse is, and I'm not going to look up and quote the verse, but the lion shall lie down with the lamb. And the phrase lions and lambs is just, you know, it's woven into our culture. Apparently, that's not what the quote is. The quote now is the wolf shall lie down with the lamb. But yet, I totally remember it being, the lion shall lie down with the lamb. And there's plenty of artwork and other things that show lions and lambs. A while back, there was a movie titled Lions for Lambs. What if it's the wolf shall lie down with the lamb, what did that change? Did we have that wrong all the time? That's one that, yes, that freaks me out. So, what could this possibly mean? What could be the cause of all this? Well, people have theories. There are several major theories of how the Mandela Effect works beyond the people who deny that it exists at all. And I have a very, very difficult time denying that it exists at all. I am pretty much decided that it does exist in some form. How it works or what it means, I don't claim to know. But something is happening when millions of people have memories that don't match the records and the facts of consensus reality. Some people attach a great deal of religious significance to this. Now, it depends on your perspective. I'm not here to trash anybody's religious views, but this is a sign of the end times, or it's the work of the devil. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't ring a bell with me. Most of all, because the changes or the false memories tend to be so mundane and peripheral that I can't conceive that Satan cares about the spelling of breakfast cereals or the Berenstain Bears or some words in a movie. If it only affected the Bible or only affected, you know, things of great significance, I'd at least be a little more open-minded. But there is no scenario where I see that making sense. That's my opinion for what it's worth. Other people believe that we live in a multiverse and that we have somehow changed dimensions from where those memories were true. I have some problems with that. I don't discard the idea that we live in a multiverse. I think that's very possible. I do find it hard to believe that we wandered over from a world where there used to be a Fruit of the Loom logo with a cornucopia to one where there isn't one. Those changes just don't seem significant enough that we're traveling through different dimensions. Again, I don't know. I don't know the mechanism, and I don't know what any of that would mean. I just kind of hold that in kind of a gray area, because the multiverse idea absolutely does appeal to me. And that periodically, maybe we do wander into very nearby other universes that are almost like our own, but not quite. That would explain a lot of things. But again, there's not only no evidence, it's really hard to even define what would be evidence. As the quote, and I'm sorry I don't have the source for the quote, but it floats around pretty commonly. If you think you understand quantum physics, that means you don't understand quantum physics. I don't even pretend to, okay? Do I think it's a possibility? Yes, I'll hold it open as a possibility. Many people attach a lot of significance to the super collider at CERN in Switzerland, where they're working on quantum physics. Particle physics. And I don't attach a huge lot of importance to that. However, I really wish the staff who worked at CERN, which is an acronym, C-E-R-N, Google it, I really wish they hadn't made that parody video where they kind of respond to the internet allegations that they opened a portal or did something else that affected reality. And it's very mocking. It's very tongue-in-cheek. I get it. You know, people are saying things about you on the internet and you want to kind of come back at them. But I really wish they hadn't done that, because I watched that video once. It was creepy as hell. Okay. And it just seemed to be winking a little too hard. And it might be in your best interests not to freak out people that already think you're doing something drastic and extreme to the fabric of reality. The lunatic fringe is called that for a reason. And maybe you ought not to agitate them. Okay. I am not one of those certain believers. I don't think that anything was opened at CERN that suddenly caused all this. And again, I just don't see how even opening a portal would cause a change in the name of breakfast cereals, or in corporate logos, or the way that people spell Chick-fil-A. I just do not see that being a cause and effect. So yes, there's all that. I read a very interesting essay a while back where a person proposed that this was a long-range government testing program to see how much they could change the narrative and people would accept it. That made a lot of sense to me. The difficulty I just see is in the scope. It would seem you'd have to involve so many people and spend so much money to fool them into thinking that reality had always been a different way than it was. And yet, I don't see anybody monitoring that. And of course, it could be being done secretly. But that's asking a lot of a government that doesn't really seem to have it together all that often. I don't eliminate that as a possibility, but I don't think that's the most likely. I find it fascinating. The idea that the government would experiment with how much they could rewrite the past and we'd still accept it does pique my interest. But I don't think that's necessarily the answer. I hold that as an idea that I entertain. So what do I think really is happening? Well, I'll just put it out there and leave it lay there. I think it may be related to time travel. I believe that at some point in humanity's future, we will discover how to do time travel. Real time travel, back to the future type stuff. Yes, actual time travel. Not something that can only be done in a lab, and not something that's, you know, a theoretical physics problem, but real, true time travel. And we may not discover that for 1,000 years, 10,000 years, however many years. But once we discover it, and it's really back to the past, forward to the future time travel, then it's always here. And I at least tentatively do believe that time travelers walk among us. I've written a novel about that, that hopefully we'll see daylight one of these times. But that covers some of the practical issues that would result from time travel. Could someone going back to the past change something and affect the present and future? I tend to believe yes, but like the Mandela effect, I don't believe it would be important things. I don't believe you could go back in time and stop Hitler, because I believe the change, such a important point in history, would preclude your own existence, and therefore you couldn't go back and do it. So I don't think you can go back in time and make big changes. But do I think you can go back in time and make trivial changes? Yes, I do. And would that result in something being spelled differently? Would that result in a logo looking different? a line in a movie changing, a line in a song changing? Yes, because that's the sort of trivial stuff that wouldn't preclude your existence. Not to say that it doesn't matter, but it wouldn't change history so much that the time travel program doesn't exist and the time traveler doesn't exist and it can't be done. So that's my favorite theory amongst several, and there's probably several more that I haven't heard yet, but that's what I would suggest is going on, that the past has been changed, which is no small thing. I mean, that's pretty huge. That possibly people from the future have come back to our time and to past times and intentionally, or in my humble opinion, more likely unintentionally, changed something so that the past has been changed retroactively. And we remember the way it used to be, but reality has been altered. And that is where I will leave it for this evening. That is only my opinion. Please feel free to share yours. As usual, thanks for listening. This is The Weird Part. I'm Vincent Trewell. Thank you and good night.